This is In Focus on WSIU. I'm Jeff Williams. Betty Coed is the historian of the United States Senate. It's a post she's held since 2015, following nearly two decades of service as a staff member of that office. Coed is a guest of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute and is visiting the Southern Illinois University campus today. I spoke with her earlier about her role in the U.S. Senate.
The U.S. Senate is such a storied institution, and I can't even begin to imagine what it must be like to be the historian of such a august and robust organization. Well, I guess maybe just what does a U.S. Senate historian do?
Well, I can tell you it's never boring. We never have a boring day. I start with the most basic mission of our office, the Senate Historical Office, is to preserve and promote the history of the Senate. So an important part of what I do is that I work with the Senate archivist to make sure that the Senate is properly archiving its records. Senators are properly archiving their records in home state repositories. And then the promoting part of it as well is I make those archival resources known to people so that scholars are consulting them, historians are researching in them. I work with a lot of congressional senators around the country to make sure that they're making good use of Senate records, all in the hope that they will write good scholarly work about the Senate. And that's the most basic part of our mission. But beyond that, I spend my day talking to senators, to the staff, to the public, to the press about any historical topic within the realm of Senate history. I never know when I arrive in the office what the day is going to be like. I always have lots of big projects I'm working on, research and writing projects, website projects, podcasts. But when I arrive in the morning, it's usually the list of messages on my desk that will dictate what the day is going to be like. And it's not unusual for me to get a call from a senator at 9 in the morning and say, I'm going to be in a hearing this afternoon on tax policy, and I need to know everything I can know about the 1986 tax law by 2 o'clock today or something. So I'll spend a couple hours digging deep into the history of that and writing a report and sending that off to that person so that he or she can be prepared for that hearing. It's also not unusual for me to get called up by the leader's office to say, we have a visiting dignitary here. Will you take him or her on a special tour of the Capitol building? So it's a far-ranging list of duties that I have. And working with audiences as young as kindergartens all the way up to advanced PhD students and scholars who are doing in-depth research into the Senate history. And I also work with a staff. I have 9 people on my staff, 2 other historians, as well as the archivist and a support staff. And each of us have our own area of expertise within the Senate. One of my areas is the history of women in the Senate and the role that women have played in the Senate even before they became U.S. senators, as well as the history of the impeachment and nomination confirmation processes. We have another historian who's really an expert on Senate investigations, and I have another one that's really into the judicial aspects of what the Senate does. So we have a good staff that covers a lot of ground in terms of our training, and we put that to good use every day.
So I guess you've gotten to chronicle the story of our junior senator from Illinois and all of her the changes that have come about in the Senate as a result of her motherhood and being a female senator with a small child
that noteworthy day when she took her child onto the Senate chamber floor and to cast a vote, which had never been done before. And to her credit, she was willing to push the limits because the Senate is a very tradition-bound institution. It's also still a very male-dominated institution, although that is changing. We now have a quarter of senators who are women. But really, not until 1992 did we get more than 2 women serve simultaneously in the Senate. So that's a pretty recent phenomenon. But when Senator Duckworth came into office, she didn't take no for an answer, and she just kept insisting. And so we watched that very carefully because it really helped to change the nature of the institution to make it more friendly to women and more friendly to mothers who can serve in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And the staff loved it.
We as the saying goes, we certainly are living in interesting times. And I would assume you're in kind of a unique position to observe all that is going on in the Senate in this particular day and age in this administration. There are probably those in our audience who would like to be a fly on the wall sometimes with some of the goings on that have transpired. As a historian, do you ever look or put into context the nature of how the business of the Senate takes place between various administrations? I mean, it's certainly from the outside looking in. I mean, many of us see gridlock and rancor, and we know all the good things take place too. But you don't hear about those as much because they don't make news. But I think it's an interesting perspective to have, to look at the history as it unfolds, especially between administrations and how that's reflective of society.
I agree. And it is kind of a fly on the wall perspective in a lot of ways, because I can, at any time I want to, I can go sit in the Senate chamber and watch the proceedings are underway. I have the privilege of being able to speak directly to senators to get their perspective on things. And so that's very useful for me as an historian. But I'm also in the position where I speak to the public a lot. And a lot of times the questions I get is, has it ever been like this? Have we ever been in this kind of situation before? Have we ever been this divided before? And I often find myself reminding them that we've had very divisive times in the past. One of the big differences is that in the past, they haven't always been partisan divisions. Mm-hmm. We've had times when we've been divided between North and South, or East and West, or rural and urban. But in the last 30 years or so, the political parties have developed in such a way that they have very strong, cohesive agendas. And because of that, the debates in the Senate and the House have become very largely divided along partisan lines. That hasn't always been the case. It wasn't that way in 1960s, 70s, and even part of the 1980s. So we see it all as strictly partisan division. So I often remind people of the divisions we've had in the past and the fact that we've overcome those divisions. We found ways to work together and gotten through them. And it's not just the Senate that has, or the politics that has changed, it's the party's development that's had a huge impact on that as well. So putting things into context is partly what we do as historians, and I'm often the one. Reporters get a little frustrated with me because I usually complicate things for them. They like a nice, hard, fast, cut-and-dried answer, and I usually say, well, it's not quite that easy. It's much more complicated. But when I speak to visitors to the Capitol or student groups, I often remind them that we've overcome major divisions in the past, and we'll probably survive this one, too.
Mm-hmm. I would assume, like any organization or body, there are those members of a particular institution that tend to set themselves apart from others. Has there been a member of the Senate that just really has, as a story, has caught your attention or is interesting to see the work of that particular individual?
Oh, many of them, going back to the very earliest days of the Senate. If I were to look at the 19th century, I might focus on Charles Sumner of Massachusetts, who famously got that beating in the Senate chamber in 1856. But that's often all people know about Charles Sumner. And in fact, he was a remarkable individual who had a passion and a vision that was so far ahead of everybody else around him that it's just truly remarkable. He died in the waiting for that vision to come true. It didn't happen in his lifetime. We had to wait for the 20th century to see that come to fruition. Another one is one of your home state senators, Everett Dirksen. He is a fascinating character, good and bad. I mean, you know, he's one of my great heroes in some ways, but particularly the civil rights bill, which I'll be talking about tonight, but also he didn't have the best record when it came to McCarthyism and that kind of stuff. So he's a very complicated individual. At the time, he was so entertaining that people tended to see him as an entertainer less, more so than as legislator. But he was actually a masterful legislator and knew how to make the deals to make bills get passed. And a truly interesting person who, no matter how much I study him, he just gets more and more interesting all the time. We also have a few. I'm also going to speak tonight about Margaret Chase Smith of Maine, who was an extremely important woman in the Senate of the 20th century. Very courageous woman who took stands that no one else would take at that time. And there's just a long, long list of them. And many of them will be ones that people have never heard of. people like John C. Spooner of Wisconsin, who was a powerful senator of the late 19th century. He was a brilliant constitutional scholar and probably the best debater and perhaps the most brilliant man in Congress at the time. But he was, in the modern terms, a workhorse, not a show horse. And so he didn't get a lot of attention, but he got a lot of things done. And so you could choose any era in Senate history, and I could easily pick out a half a dozen people who have endlessly fascinating stories to tell.
You've alluded to a couple of times about what you'll be talking about this evening. Tell us a little bit about what folks can hear when they come to the session tonight.
Well, the topic of my talk tonight is about defining leadership with a perspective from Senate history. And so I've spent a lot of time as Senate historian, and I've been doing that for more than 20 years now, of considering what it is that makes a leader. You know, we often think of leaders as majority leaders or minority leaders, but I'm thinking in a much broader context than that. What sort of qualities and qualifications go into making someone a leader and a statesman? And so I'm going to be using that query to look at some case studies in Senate history when I think leadership has really been clearly demonstrated by a individual or a group of individuals, and to sort of pull from that some of the things that we might learn and lessons we can take away from that.
You'd mentioned a little bit about the your interest in the history of women in the Senate. How has that progressed? Are we seeing equal footing, or at least respect for women coming into the U.S. Senate? Is it encouraging? Are more women now, do you think, thinking about the Senate when maybe before they might not have thought about running for U.S. Senate?
Yes, certainly they are. I mentioned Margaret Chase Smith. She came in 1949 and served for 24 years. For 15 of her 24 years, she was the only woman in the Senate. So that was the nature of the Senate, 99 men and one woman at the time. In the modern Senate, it's not just the 25% of the Senate that are female now in terms of membership. It's much more than that. We have seen tremendous progress in the role of women on staff, for instance. Since the 1940s, when we started having the position of chief of staff to a senator, for instance, we started out with a very small number, five or six women in the early days in the 1940s and 50s. Now we're up to something like 37, 38 members have female chiefs of staff. We're seeing a lot more women who are leading committees of staff directors. That's really where you see the greatest progress of the role of women. And it's 20 years ago, I've interviewed women who were chiefs of staff in the 1990s, for instance, and they've told me that they were looked at as just this sort of oddity, that, you know, there were so few of them that how did you get here and why are you here? But now it's become so common that no one thinks about that. You know, Majority Leader McConnell has a very smart and able female chief of staff, and no one would ever question her qualifications for being there. She's highly respected. And that's a common situation now in the Senate. So I think we've made tremendous progress in the role of women in the Senate in general and the acceptance of women in high positions of power in the Senate. We're a little slow in catching up with the number of female senators. I would like to see it be more be closer to 50% and not at 25%. But we've come a long way in the last few years, so I don't think it's going to take too long to get there.
Betty's coming full circle. What do you hope that people understand and appreciate about the U.S. Senate?
I would like them to realize that the Senate plays a very special role in our government, partly because it's part of the legislative branch. It's one-third of the major part of our government. But even within the legislative branch, it plays a very particular role. And in the Senate, individuals really do matter, because in the Senate, every single senator has an equal voice. Whether you're from a large state or a small state, female or male, it doesn't matter. Everyone has an equal voice. And that means that every single senator has the potential to become a leader and has the potential to make a difference and has the potential to see their particular agenda come through. And in nowhere else in the federal government does a single individual have that kind of privilege, power, and opportunity. And I think that's what really makes the Senate unique. And regardless of everything they do with procedures and filibusters and all the things that they tinker with all the time and have been tinkering with for 230 years, at its core, it is a body of individuals, and every individual is empowered to do their best for their constituents and for the nation at large. And I think that's really the core of the Senate.
That's Betty Coed, the historian of the United States Senate. She will give a talk tonight at the SIU School of Law beginning at 6 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. For WSIU In Focus, I'm Jeff Williams.